Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 18 for March 16th, 2007. Windows No Care. It's time once again to delve into the world of Windows with our Windows Delver, Paul Thurrott. That's a new title, a Delver.
I'm the Delver.
He's the Delver in the Dell. Paul Thurrott, of course, is the creator of the Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. Really a great resource for Windows, despite what some Mac bigots might say. And
there are Mac bigots?
Every once in a while. I don't know why. First, John Gruber, who I think the world of, goes after you.
Yeah,
and then Dan goes after you, which is bizarre. I don't understand it. Oh, I won't bring it up if you haven't seen it. He'll just start your day rotten.
It doesn't matter. It's the same misunderstood complaint
everywhere that you don't understand Mac and you hate Macs, which I know for a fact is not true. And ironically, we get people complaining to us that you talk too much about the Mac.
I know. I'm schizophrenic, Leo. I think that's the problem.
You're annoying everyone. So knock it off.
Oh, sorry. Well, that concludes our episode for this week. Thank you for joining us.
At the end of the episode, not at the beginning, I'll find the article and I'll read a little bit to you. But let's take a look at some of the issues in Windows today. First of all, feedback to our Zoom interview with Dave Calton. We do apologize for the audio quality. Sometimes that happens. We can't control it. Some people are better at Skyping than others. But we're going to send Dave a headset. Maybe it'll sound a little bit better next time. But I thought he was quite good. In fact, he turned me around in many ways in terms of my opinion of the Zoom and my hopes for the future of the Zoom. And I think a lot of people agreed.
Speaking of people that others might have natural opinions about without really knowing much about him. He works for Microsoft and he works on the Zoom team, but he also does their competitive analysis. And I think it's important to listen to what he has to say because he's not saying this in a self-serving sense. I mean, he has to go back to Bill Gates and others and say, look, this is the reality of the market and this is what I think we should do. And he has lots of great data and he's a good guy and a smart guy and all that stuff. But he's one of the few people there really just coming out and saying, look, this is the real story. I mean, this is what's happening. You know, it's not a made up marketing exercise.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that he kind of convinced me that there may be some hope for the Zoom too, with the next generation and so forth. So I'm willing to give it another chance.
It seemed to me that the Zoom launch went so poorly, back in November that, when I got the call from him, that we were going to talk and on the record about this stuff. I actually had this weird feeling in the back of my head that they were going to announce their exit, from the market. And then it was completely the opposite of that.
No. Yeah. They're here to stay.
Yeah. It didn't go so well. We're done.
We just want everybody to know, we tried, but
just kidding.
No, and in fact, it's very clear that they're not, and they have high hopes for it. And as I said then, I think even if you like the iPod, it's very important that Apple have some challengers, and the more competition, the better for everybody, except Apple.
But as advocates of technology and of users, I would say we're not so concerned with the corporations as we are with the users, and I think it's better for everybody that matters.
One Care, however, not providing much of a competitive alternative for users.
No, I guess not.
Antivirus. I liked One Care. In fact, I recommended it for newbies. It's not my. Even at the time, knew it wasn't the best antivirus out there. But it was just so easily integrated into Windows. It was inexpensive because you could put it on three machines for the same price.
Yeah, you could get it for about $11 on sale. I mean, it's cheaper than anything.
But it turns out you get what you pay for.
Exactly. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I'll say this. I like the idea of OneCare. If you think about what it really is, it's sort of like an IT department in a box. You know, the idea is that you shouldn't have to worry about this stuff and that this thing will run in the background, optimizing your computer, keeping it secure and all that stuff. And that's what a neat idea. You know, and it caused companies like Symantec and McAfee to really rethink their own security suites. And they've since, or at least in Symantec's case, have since come out with products that are more like OneCare, except that I guess they work. You know, the problem is that in comparative tests, OneCare has fared very poorly. And, you know, they've revved it a few times. The 1.5 version came out in late January, I believe, adding Vista compatibility and a few other features. And they're already talking about 2.0. There's going to be a public beta in late April that adds, you know, even more functionality. So they're extending it. And that's neat. But, yeah, it's got some problems. And I don't know if you heard about this, but the latest problem is, users began reporting last month that this thing was eating their email files. So if you were using Outlook 2002, 2003, or 2007, or the version of Outlook Express that's in Windows XP, if it detected a virus in an email, rather than quarantining or deleting that thing, it quarantined or deleted your entire email file, which is like that PST file on Outlook or your
You're kidding, your whole PST
DBX
file?
Files. Yeah. Now, the thing is, by default, OneCare is configured to quarantine these. But if you went in there and futzed with the settings, you could actually cause it to delete it. But even if it's quarantined, I mean, to the typical person, like the guys you're talking about, the newbies or the
Quarantining your PST file is kind of extreme. I imagine.
Well, yes. Because you launch Outlook and it says, sorry, you don't have any email. You know, we can't even find the file. Do you want to create a new one?
I occasionally get questions on the radio show for people who say, my email has disappeared. Maybe that's what's going on. That's very interesting.
Right. Now, on Sunday, the company quietly released an update. So if you're running OneCare and you're online, it will just download.
Well, and that's the beauty of OneCare. You just kind of always update it automatically in the background. So presumably, most noobs will have a new version.
Right. But the problem is you still have to go back and manually get that file back if it's been quarantined. And if it's been deleted, you're just screwed. It's gone.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's really bad.
So don't mess with the settings.
I guess. I mean, there's a certain irony. I mean, there's a whole category of humor based around the Microsoft security concept, you know, that this is an oxymoron and so forth.
Right.
The notion that OneCare would do exactly the opposite of what it was designed to do is ironic and sad, but hopefully they've got a handle on it.
Well, and because it ranked lowest in the AV comparatives tests among all antiviruses, it's just pretty hard to recommend an antivirus that misses 18% of all viruses.
You know, it's funny. Right after I saw that, I went and looked at my systems because, you know, since I've been running Windows Vista, I've made a change in the way that I look at, you know, security products, right? Because as we were talking earlier, when you use a PC, you have to have some kind of security there.
Right.
You know, you have to use something. You can't just throw it on the internet, you know. There are simple things you can do, like put it behind a hardware router of some sort with a firewall and all that. I mean, that's not going to solve your problems, but, you know, directly connecting a Windows-based PC to a high-speed internet connection is a countdown, you know, to Armageddon.
Right, so
you have to be careful.
Right.
Now, most people run these big security suites like Symantec and McAfee make. I don't like these products because they're really, really resource-intensive. And there's nothing worse than using a computer and not knowing why it's suddenly running much slower and the hard drive is churning and it's doing all this stuff. And I hate that. And one of the reasons I really liked OneCare, let's say last fall when it first came out for Windows XP, is that compared to those suites, it was relatively low impact.
Right.
You know, the thing would be on the system. You wouldn't really notice anything. It's sitting there quietly doing its job, and it's nice. And
That's exactly what I liked. It was transparent.
Yeah.
But the doing its job part turned out not to be quite exactly accurate.
And it's funny because, you know, when Vista was finalized in November and I moved to it almost completely, I have one test system that I still use for XP. There was no version of OneCare available. And I actually kind of, I felt weird about that. You know, I had grown to sort of trust OneCare and to enjoy it. So I started looking around for Vista-based security solutions. And there weren't many, you know, for those first couple of months. For the past few months, however, I've been using that AVG free version. You know, this is the free downloadable Grisoft security solution
free,
for antivirus.
Free.grisoft.com.
Right. And, you know, if you think about Vista and the things that are built in, you know, it has built-in spyware, anti-spyware with Windows Defender, which also is not very highly rated necessarily. But you can run multiple spyware applications at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've got AV with that. Windows has got a firewall built in. Again, not exactly highly rated, but better than nothing. And after I saw this antivirus comparative test and saw how poorly OneCare did, I looked up AVG. They kind of came in the middle, I would say, somewhere. And I thought I would run some third-party applications on here and see if my systems had picked anything up, you know.
Right.
And as it turns out, they haven't. There's no virus on there on either of the systems I tested. There's no malware of any kind. There's no spyware. So I'm not saying that I'm necessarily the test case for everybody, but in my own admittedly unscientific test, just running Vista by itself with AVG for 2 months straight on a desktop and a laptop, I haven't seen anything.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I think AVG is fine. And actually, it's interesting because the number one rated antivirus in that mm-hmm. list was a compound of Kaspersky and another free antivirus called Avast. And that did those two together did better than anything else, but still not perfect. The real question is, do you even need an antivirus if you're running Vista?
Oh, yeah, I think you do.
Okay, there's the answer.
No, I do. Yes. I mean, that would just, I think that would
well,
be.
Well, isn't that what Alchin said?
Tempting fate.
Is it because Vista was so good, he wasn't going to put an antivirus on his daughter's computer?
Well, sort of. What he said was that his child's machine doesn't have antivirus on it, and it was because it was locked down with parental controls, and he wasn't allowed to hit any websites that were dangerous.
Okay,
so,
well, there you go.
It was qualified, I guess. I recommend antivirus.
Yeah, and you like you know, AVG.
For the record, I like AVG better than Avast as far as a sort of a user experience standpoint.
Right.
Avast is a little obnoxious. It literally talks to you, which I can't stand. And it has multiple icons in the tray by default. It's a little harder to configure and so forth. But okay. Similar.
I use something called Nod32, which is very lightweight, but very effective. Also.
Now that one is, you have to pay for that, don't you?
Yeah, it's not free.
Or is that free?
No, it's not
free. It's not free.
Yeah. You know, none of the free ones are as good as the paid ones, but hey,
sure,
they're free. And the truth is, I think if you know what you're doing, and I say this on the radio show now, I think behavior is more important than anything.
Right.
The antivirus these days, no antivirus is going to protect you 100%. And if you get a virus, you're really out of luck because they don't disinfect as well as they used to. So, change your behavior.
Right. The only nasty event I ever had with spyware occurred a few years back when Windows XP Service Pack 2 was still in beta. And the firewall at the time was sort of a new thing, and it was breaking a lot of stuff. And one of the things it was breaking for me was the ability to print over the network. So I literally would have to turn off the firewall, print the document, turn the firewall back on. And I had mistakenly left the firewall off, and I got some amazing spyware.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And that's the only thing like that I can really look back on as a major... Well, that and the my web server being hacked by the Chinese one time back around the Slammer stuff. Although, because I had moved my web, the directory for the website to the non-default location, they overwrote the default location, not my actual website. So I didn't get any damage from that either, but that was more of a server-based thing, I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I talk all the time on the radio show about my five rules. One of them is to have a router, at least, as mm-hmm. a firewall, but then it's also a good idea to turn on the Windows firewall for intra-LAN infections. If you bring in a computer or a laptop that's infected, obviously the firewall and the router is not going to do any good, but a Windows firewall will.
A lot of the problems is what happens once you do get something. So you can have all the preventive care in the world, but
you're screwed now.
Yeah, if you don't have anything that can remove stuff, you're in trouble.
Well, and even so, I mean, you could put it on, but I think nowadays, especially with spyware, ironically, it's worse than viruses. You really can't get rid of them. And you know,
it's unbelievable.
Steve Gibson says all the time, and it's certainly worth paying attention to, that the problem is if you're infected, you really don't know when you're uninfected, and an antivirus may say everything's gone, but nowadays, with rootkits and sophisticated viruses, the only way to know that you've really gotten rid of every infection is to format and reinstall, and that's pretty draconian.
What a great solution that
yeah.
is. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, that's why a lot of people, I think, are looking at Linux. And there's an article today in the Wall Street Journal. We're recording this on Monday or Tuesday.
Yes.
About desktop Linux. It's back, baby.
Well, sort of.
You blogged, yeah, I was you telling, blogged a little bit about it.
Well, there's a lot of, I don't want to call it pseudo-journalism, but there's a lot of, let's just say, non-investigative journalism going on where, you know, a few weeks back or a month or so ago, whatever it was, you know, Dell put up this ideas website they have for people who want to give them feedback about what they're doing wrong and they can make some changes. And one of the biggest requests they got was for Linux on the desktop. And there's been some feeling now that this was sort of a spam attempt by the Linux community because, you know, really there's no demand for Linux on the desktop per se. And Dell actually, as it turns out, has no plans to do anything about that. But there's been a lot of news generated. I wrote my own story about it. You know, Dell is inching closer to the Linux desktop, that kind of thing. So the Wall Street Journal had the story today, and I thought, this is interesting, because this is the Wall Street Journal, so they're going to have lots of good examples of companies making the leap. And,
right.
They have some anecdotal information. They do name a couple of companies and so forth, but really, in the end, and you know, even in the case of Dell specifically, there's nothing really going on there, and it turns out the Wall Street Journal is just doing this again. So, you know, one of my favorite things, and one of the things I do regularly every year is I reference these. This is the year of the desktop Linux. You know, this has been going on for a decade, every year. And there's always a reason. It might be, you know, consumers are not accepting Windows Me. This is our opportunity. We're going to get in, you know. This year it's, Windows Vista isn't doing as good as people thought it was. This is our in, you know. And there's no doubt about it. I look at Linux regularly. I download all the new distributions as they come out. I watch as this thing has evolved over time. It's actually a solid operating system. There's no doubt about it.
I think it's ready for the desktop for a lot of people. But you're right.
I do too.
And mass adoption for some reason.
It's just not happening. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I would say that unlike the Mac, Linux is not a source of innovation of any kind. In fact, Linux is basically just playing catch up.
Now, Paul, I'm going to have to disagree with you. There's some stuff going on in the Linux world that's really quite innovative. But it might not be in what you consider the traditional application categories like Office. You're right.
Well, but what I'm referring to more is, you know, there are established desktop PC norms. You know,
because you're looking at KDE and GNOME.
Well, I'm looking at things like file desktop managers.
Yeah, but you know,
also Office applications, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, but there are, you're just not seeing the bleeding edge stuff. There is a lot of very innovative. In fact, if you go onto YouTube videos out there of
I literally just this morning was looking at some of this stuff. There's a great video on YouTube of the next
desktop
version of Ubuntu that those wavy windows and, you know, all that stuff. But I mean, really, this is just an extension of, you know, companies like Apple was the first one, and Microsoft now Windows Vista are looking at 3D rendering and the user interface and how else can we do this? So maybe we drag a window around and it waves as we go, as if there were wind
right,
or something.
Right.
That's nice. But I mean, I don't
okay,
think
you're right. It doesn't change people's lives.
In other words, it still is influenced by what's going on in the commercial side. In other words, Linux didn't innovate, or the Linux community didn't innovate the notion of, you know, hardware 3D based user interfaces. Apple did.
Right.
You know, and Microsoft now is going to make it mainstream with Windows Vista. You know, that they're taking it to step 1.1 or 1.5 is nice. I mean, and maybe you can make
some.
Well,
I don't know. What do you want it to be? I mean, do you want it to be talking to you? And I mean, where would the innovation occur? What would make it something new and different, unlike anything else?
If all Linux is an approximation of what's available on Windows and the Mac, then I don't see what the point is. And I'm not saying that here's the answer. Like, this is what Linux has to do to be successful. I don't mean that. I don't know. You know, I often tell people at Microsoft, I can criticize what you're doing, but I don't actually have the answer. I'm sorry.
Right,
you know,
I
have a complaint. I don't have a solution.
Right.
No one is going to jump to something like Linux if it's just almost as good, or
what if it's just secure?
I think there are indications that Windows is just secure. I mean, ultimately, you have to make a decision between usability, compatibility, and security and other issues. It's not
just
about security.
Yeah.
If it was just security, Linux would be it. Right. Maybe.
No, that.
And, well, I mean, listen, at the end of that Wall Street Journal article is a great quote from the director of the state of Illinois' Central Management Services Department. He says that they've moved completely onto Microsoft software. They have no interest in Linux at all. And he says, we don't have time for science projects in state government.
Ow.
You know, and that's it's a little harsh.
Burn.
But, I mean, I think for people who are tech enthusiasts, listen, there's absolutely no reason why you couldn't run Linux. It's got great email and web browsing, great productivity applications. You could pick up a video game machine, and that would be your games. You've got everything you need. You know, free operating system, free applications, et cetera, et cetera. The thing is, this stuff has been available for years, and no one is doing it. No
right,
one.
Right.
You know, from a sort of a percentage basis. I mean, Mac OS X, which is, let's face it, fairly expensive to migrate to, is just kicking the heck out of Linux on the desktop. So I just don't see it.
Yeah, well, I think the numbers don't lie. You're absolutely right. I do think Linux is a contender in the Windows space. And there are places, I mean, not in the U.S. perhaps, but there are nations. I think, was it Brazil just adopted the Linux desktop?
Well, right. And those, right. Not that Brazil is necessarily a third world country.
Or Belgium.
But I was, you know, but let's just say certainly the biggest growth potential in the computer market are these countries where they're rapidly moving into technology, you know, unlike the United States, which has been gradually moving into it over its, you know, over the entire time period there have been PCs. The Far East, South America, Africa, I mean, these are huge growth opportunities and places where Linux could, in fact, make a big difference.
French National Assembly just switched from Windows to Ubuntu.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And if you are going to go to Linux, Ubuntu is definitely the way to go.
Oh, I agree. I love Ubuntu. Although SUSE is a good candidate as well. What I would love to do, and I think maybe this would be a great show special at some time, is to get you, the Mac guys, our Linux guy, Chris Tavano, on
the deathmatch,
and just talk about this and fight it out. I think that I know I'm not in a position to make a good strong case for Linux, but I think Chris.
Well, you got to remember, I'm talking purely from a sort of the reality of the market standpoint. I like Linux. I mean, I from a technical standpoint, from a even a usability standpoint, it's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. All I'm saying is it just has not taken off in the market on the desktop at all.
It's not sufficiently compelling to get people to make that switch.
No, and I don't know that I would feel comfortable recommending it to my parents or my sister,
right?
You know, to normal people.
So we're on the verge, but I think you might be right. Yeah, you know, actually, it's interesting because a couple of well-known tech guys have opted not to go to Vista, not to Linux either. Mm-hmm. Chris Perillo is going to stay with XP, and Scott Finney, who writes a computing newsletter, and I've known Scott for years, he was former editor at Ziff Davis, is going to the Mac. Harris.
The Scott Finney one is interesting because he is the resident Windows guru at Computer World right now, and he's running on the Mac.
Wow.
So that's an interesting choice. You know, I first started looking at Mac OS X when it came out in 2001, and that year I bought an iBook, and that year I started my blog because I wanted a place to write about my Apple experiences and my other non-Microsoft interests, like Linux. And I ultimately decided that moving to the Mac as my mainstream computing environment wasn't going to happen, although
A career point of view, it probably would.
Well, yeah, sure. that's actually not it. I mean, if I thought I could... you know, and I tried this. I experimented with this. You know, in other words, what if I used Mac for sort of my infrastructure stuff? I would run email on there, browse the web, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I'd always have these Windows machines where I could test things and whatever. And that just doesn't
basically
work.
It works for me. I mean, that's what I'm doing. But
yeah, I can't do it. And I have to say, for me personally, I'm actually more productive on Windows. I enjoy Windows more. I like the freedom of all the stuff that's available. I mean, when all these new services come out, like Unbox and Walmart and whatever, I can test all these things immediately and use them and see what they're like. And there are all kinds of reasons. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But I look at Chris Perillo and I look at Scott Finney and I think to myself, these guys, I think in some ways are falling into a little bit of a trap because they're really techy and they're really smart and they're maybe a little too involved in their industries like I am. And this is the thing, when I was writing my Vista review, I went into it and I thought, I'm gonna send Microsoft a message. You know, they took too much time developing this thing, and I'm gonna rip into it. But I kind of divorced myself from that, and I tried to look at Vista as if it were something I had not seen before, had not been waiting years for, had not known all the disappointments of and the missing features and the drop features and all that stuff. And what I came out of it was that this thing is pretty valuable and people are going to like it. And it's a good operating system.
Here's why Chris said he's not going to use it. His scanner doesn't work. I mean, that's why a lot of people shouldn't use Vista, because there is compatibility. He says Windows Movie Maker crashes. Well, doesn't it crash in XP? I don't know. His fax software doesn't work. His LifeCam doesn't work. That's actually been a big problem with the
Microsoft LifeCam.
Yeah.
Well, but you're looking at, I mean, so you have a very specific hardware that doesn't work. I mean, I have an HP scanner, which until very recently was not available, you know, didn't have Vista drivers. So that actually was connected to that XP test machine that I was talking about.
Right.
But that's all been resolved. I mean,
how about this? How about the performance issue? Because that's, I mean, that's one that's not going to go away. He says on the same machine, XP is much faster than.
See, I don't see that. I honestly don't
see that. He's not offering any numbers. So it's purely subjective.
Right. No, I'm not saying he's wrong. I mean, I'm just, you know, everyone's going to have different experiences, but I do think, no doubt about it, when guys like Chris Brillo and Scott Finney push back like this, it's something worth discussing. I mean, there's no I bought, let's see, it was about a year and a half ago, I bought a Mac Mini for my wife for Christmas, and she runs it upstairs in her own office, and she hasn't really had any problems. It's fine. And I did that because
you didn't want to support her on viruses.
I don't like supporting her. Yeah, I don't like going up. You know, what would happen is I would occasionally go up there for some reason, and I would see all these messages she had never responded to, all these downloads that she had never done, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, Stephanie, why can't you do this? You know, and ultimately that was just too much of a hassle. And I have to say, that's one of those things that the Mac and Apple gets right. I mean,
so now you never go upstairs anymore.
No. And when I do, I look at it, there's nothing to do.
Interesting.
You know, I'll tell you something funny too. You know, she wanted a CD and she wanted to get it onto her computer and she wanted to rip it to the computer. So I gave her the CD and I said, you know, go, you can do it.
See if you can, you know,
iTunes will come up. So she said, well, where do I put this thing? So what do you mean? She goes, well, I don't have a drive for this. I said, Stephanie, it's built into the front of your computer.
That slot?
She says, are you sure? I've never seen it. It's like on her desk at almost eye level, and she never even noticed.
Well, it's just a little slot. There's no drawer, so maybe she expected a PC-style drawer.
So I don't know. Anyway, so
feature.
For people that aren't interested in leading-edge stuff, like games and, you know, all that kind of crazy stuff.
But you can't say Scott Finney is that kind of guy.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
Now, it's interesting to watch him do the beginner Mac dance, because he's making all the same silly mistakes that every beginner makes.
It's a little frustrating to me because, like I said, I mean, people have been doing this stuff for years, and to watch him publicly, you know, make the same mistakes and things is a little irritating. You know,
I stopped looking at
BB Edit. It's painful. It's painful.
You know,
Do you guys know of a fax application for the Mac? Are there such things? You know? Oh, God.
It's just painful.
Please stop.
I almost want to send Scott just a long email saying, stop, forget BB Edit, text mate. Forget, you know, just boom, 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 all the way down. But you know what? It's great. He's figuring it out. And there are lots of people in his position. I think there are a lot of switchers out there right now who are probably benefiting by his, with his journey. Going along for the ride.
Sure. Well, it's right. Although there might be a side case to be made if he is stumbling so badly here or having, you know, so many questions. I mean, what will happen to the average user?
Right.
For people like my wife who literally need email, web browsing, and Microsoft Word,
it's straightforward.
Switching to the Mac is very simple. I mean,
but if you have a lot of Windows applications you use and you need to find analogs for,
The past year and, you know, X number of months, there have been two things that she came down and asked about. One was Microsoft Money, which she used for the home finances. This is obviously not available in the Mac. And the other one was the Southwest Ding application. And since asking about that, they've released a version of that for the Mac, so that's been no big deal. But those were literally her two missing applications, and that's not too shabby. So that was pretty easy to overcome. We have extra Windows machines. I know that's surprising. So I gave her a laptop and said, "Here's your Microsoft Money machine. Go nuts."
It's not an easy transition, but it's easier, you're saying, for the novice than it is for somebody who's so deeply tied into Windows.
Well, I mean, listen, I think of myself, and I have very specific things that I need to do every single day. And just something like finding a web application development application is horrific for someone like me because I have very specific needs. And on the Mac, it seems like there's a lot of stuff, but it's either super, super easy, lots of fun looking professional templates, not a lot of customize, you know, customizing you can do, or BB edit.
I think it's just familiarity, frankly, because I'd have the same issue going the other direction. I mean, there are a dozen Mac applications that I use that are, I know for a fact there's no analog, no good analog on the PC, and I would miss them. So I think it's just what you're used to. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily an advantage one way or the other in that case.
Well, we should talk. We should see about getting these guys on.
Be fun.
I'd be interested to see.
We'll bring Chris on. We'll bring Scott on, and they're both old friends, and maybe we can get Chris DeBona on for the Linux side. Okay. So then we'd have Mac, XP, Linux, and well represented. We could have a little round table.
I listen, even myself. I mean, when XP came out, when Windows 2000 came out, I sort of lamented Microsoft's move from the NT code base, and I wrote a very scathing, not from the NT code base, from the NT, you know, branding thing, because to me, NT meant something.
Right.
And I didn't go to the Windows 2000 launch. I felt very disconnected from that whole thing and felt that they had made a mistake.
We're all just whiny babies. We don't like change. Let's face
exactly.
It. We don't change. Yeah. I hate you. But I have to say, I was mad when they went from Windows 2000 to XP. I thought Windows 2000 was the best version of Windows ever.
Sure.
So
at
there
the
you
time,
go.
Although you'd be suicidal to run such a thing today.
I know a couple of suicidal guys like Steve Gibson who really are.
Really, he runs 2000.
They don't like the idea of.
But you're making a decision to limit what's available to you from sort of a functionality standpoint, right? For probably good reasons. I mean, I'm sure he has good reasons, but I just can't. I don't think normal. Not that he's not normal. I mean, I don't think that average, you know, consumers, let's say, which is what I mean by normal people, can make decisions like that. I mean, they want more stuff.
No, they're going to go to Vista. They should. In fact, my recommendation at this point to, and I am constantly thinking about it, I'm not convinced it's the right one, is if you're buying a new machine and you're getting Vista on it, that's fine. But I don't recommend people with their existing XP machines upgrade to Vista. I think it's not time to do that yet.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've seen too many complaints from people about problems with this process, even though, again, it's been improved pretty dramatically.
It'll be in 6 months, it'll be fine, I'm sure. But but right now is not the time to rush out and buy Vista, I don't think.
Sure.
On the other hand, if you're getting it with a new machine, it's great. Of course, I said the same thing about Windows ME.
Right. Well, that was true. I mean, Windows ME is terrible because for a lot of people, it actually worked. It did work fine, you know, and you don't hear from those people.
And on a new machine, it worked great.
Yeah, but if you were one of those people that had problems, was it bad? Yeah,
and
it was
still
just
having
bad.
I think the only issue with a roundtable like this is ultimately, when you really get down to it, it's purely a personal choice.
And no one's going to change their mind about anything. I'm not going to get together with anyone from the Mac community and get them to switch to Windows Vista. Not that I would try such a thing, but they're not going to back off of their
And a
opinions,
Linux guy's
you know?
Not going to back off, and a Vista guy's not going to. And the truth is, ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, there is not that much difference. And I guess that was your original point between any of these. They're all computers. They're all operating systems. They all do approximately the same thing. The differences are minor and they're personal. And it's completely appropriate for you to make a personal decision. Let's not make a religious war out of any of it, frankly.
Actually, there's an interesting. Well, Chris Perillo, of course, is sticking with XP. I mean, I've always felt that Mac OS X was more aimed at technical people. You know, it's not surprising that someone like Scott Finney would be attracted to that. I mean, it's the same reason I'm intrigued by it. You know, there's not really a lot of hand-holding going on in Mac OS X, despite the ease of use.
Ironically, it's become in many ways what Windows used to be, which is the technical OS.
Yeah.
That's because it's a good Unix underneath. It's because of all the programming languages.
If you really know what you're doing, it's a good choice.
Yeah, there's a lot of power tools out there. Vista is becoming like the Mac was, an operating system really designed for people who don't want to spend a lot of time tweaking.
Yeah, and that's probably most people. It's just like car enthusiasts. I mean, no one wants to know what's going on under the hood. So.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's happening, is that Linux and OS X are really enthusiast operating systems and Vista for the rest of us, which is ironic because that used to be the Mac slogan.
Yeah, it's like the Volks OS.
Yeah. iTunes now works on Vista, right?
Sort of. more than it did before.
But, you know, baffles me. Vista's been out since October. And yeah. and still, people haven't got their drivers working. They can't get their applications working. Why does it take so long?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could take the cynical approach and say, in Apple's case, you know, we're talking about iTunes, that, you know, maybe they have a competitive right. reason to be a little on the slow side.
That's what but, I thought.
I don't know. You know, maybe it is difficult. Apple certainly went their own way with iTunes. We don't know how it's developed exactly. So maybe transitioning this thing to the new security model in Vista, the various changes to the architecture, it was difficult. So they have shipped a release, iTunes 7.1, which fixes a bunch of problems with Windows Vista. And I have heard from people who literally could not use Vista with iTunes together that this actually fixes things for them and it works. And that's great. But even Apple on their page describing the update lists a few remaining issues, you know, so hopefully these things will be addressed over time and then this will no longer be an issue.
So it kind of works and certainly
yeah,
if you're trying
it
to
works for me. I mean, I don't use iTunes with the iPod on Windows. My iPod is connected to my Mac. And that's where I manage all, you know, that's the master copy, I guess, of my music collection. One of the things, I love iTunes, it is what I use. But one of the things I really don't like about it is Apple does nothing to make it easy to move a music library, or synchronize a music library even better, between different PCs or Macs. So you can obviously you can copy the files over, that's no big deal. But if you want to get things like your ratings, you know, the number of times things have been played, et cetera, that stuff is in some proprietary library, and it's actually pretty difficult to move this thing from machine to machine. I've done it. Moving between Windows and a Mac is another level of complexity. But you can't synchronize it automatically, at least as far as I know. You have to do it manually, so it's kind of an in-place slice-in-time look at your, you know, whatever, your ratings and so right. forth. I hope they fix that stuff. But that's not the problem. I mean, in Windows Vista, there are things like, you know, there were people who were literally losing all the data on their iPods right, when right. they ejected them, you know, various graphical issues, performance issues, and so forth. So they're getting there.
Let's get to the real important platform war. Forget right. Linux, forget OS X, forget Vista and XP. What about Xbox versus PlayStation versus Nintendo?
Finally, the meat of the episode.
The thing that we really care about. So this is
all I care about.
This is a shocker to me because you're an Xbox 360 guy, as am I.
I am
very happy with it. You bought a PlayStation 3.
I did. Well, you know, it's funny because on Friday, I wrote a blurb in Short Takes in WinInfo about Sony and the PlayStation and when are these guys going to have these things out in the market and yada, yada, yada. My son was home sick on Friday. He was up, you know, puking all Thursday night. So, and I remember saying to him, I said, listen, I hope you feel better. I really do. But you need to be sick enough tomorrow that you can stay home so we can play video games. And
you're such a good dad.
I know. I'm father of the year, you know. So he was. God bless him. So I went to the gym and I stopped by Best Buy afterwards to pick up a game so we could play something. And they had PlayStation 3s in stock, you know.
Quite a few.
Just random. Yeah.
It's not that random. I think almost everywhere has PlayStation 3s.
Well, up till now, it had been pretty random. I'd gone in Best Buy numerous times looking for it, and one time literally saw a guy buying one at the cash register, and it was the last one. I just missed it, you know, that kind of thing. So I picked up the console. I picked up a game. I picked up an extra controller. $750. I mean, this is like, yikes. You know, I bought cars for less money than this, you know. wow. Not recently, but, you know.
Wow.
And I brought this thing home, and the look on my wife's face was priceless, and fortunately, we're not divorced. But
was it disdain?
Expensive.
Was it disgust? Was it...
Well, it was one of those, I knew this was coming.
Yeah.
I just can't feel good about this purchase.
Yeah, but see, you and I have this great excuse. Honey, it's for work.
Right. Right.
And believe me, I use that excuse.
I'm trying to work on the math on this one. If I could ever write enough about PlayStation to make up the money I spent on it.
I don't know.
Guess is no. I'll try, but
good
I
luck.
Mean, I'll review it. And I've got an interesting, I hope it will be an interesting comparison of some of the games and so forth. But listen, like you said, I'm an Xbox guy. I mean, the whole achievement point thing and the online person, I've got friends and we play online, and I've got a guy up the street. We go up to his house, and we play Gears of War with, you know, up to a dozen other guys, and we do all this stuff. I mean, I'm really involved with the Xbox. wow, is the PlayStation good?
What?
It's
oh my
really
gosh,
good.
I'm going to have a heart attack here. I'm going to pass out. You're the first person I've ever heard say that.
It's really, really good. And what everyone
game,
who has trashed this.
What game are you playing?
Yeah. So I'm playing Resistance Fall of Man.
Okay.
Which is like Gears of War. You know, graphically, they're very similar. Gears of War is an absolutely stunning looking game. And single player, it's fantastic. Resistance is very similar. It's kind of all browns instead of all grays.
Right.
It's a weird combination of games. It's an alien blast fest set in a Call of Duty 3 World War II world.
Interesting.
It's got elements from Halo 2 where you ride around in Jeeps and the physics are awesome and it's a lot of fun. The online play is fantastic. It's much better than Gears of War, which has been a huge disappointment, the multiplayer aspect of that game. But I think the thing that's telling, just with this one game, is this is a first-generation game. These guys don't know the system inside and out yet, and it's already just about as good as Gears of War,
wow,
which has been touted as the absolute greatest video game of all time, and obviously the best Xbox 360 game ever made. It's still, as of today, is the most often played game on Xbox Live, even though the multiplayer part of Gears of War is absolutely horrible.
Hmm.
So there are different aspects to it. I mean, the machine is quiet, which I love. You know, we have an Xbox 360 in my den, which we're using as a media center extender. It sounds like we're starting up a jet engine every time we turn the thing on. It's way too loud.
Oh, dear.
It overheat. You know, these things overheat very easily, et cetera. The PlayStation makes a whisper kind of humming sound, and you don't really hear it. It makes a soft chunking sound when you put a disc in.
Hmm.
Nothing. I mean, there's no sound at all.
I have to
say, there are different things.
That is a big negative, and I have the HD DVD player for the Xbox 360, but the whine
right.
is so loud, I don't want to even...
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah. So maybe I'll go Blu-ray.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm going to run out today. You know, the James Bond movie came out today, and I'm probably going to pick it up on Blu-ray just because I want to...
Yeah.
You know, see what that looks like. I don't have a Blu-ray movie to test yet.
Right.
The HD DVD movie that came with the drive, that King Kong movie, to me wasn't demonstrably better than the DVD version. Maybe I'm missing something.
Oh, you're not looking on the right TV.
No.
Okay. It's significant.
You saw the difference?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this is something I need to look into. The online service that Microsoft has is vastly superior to what's on the PlayStation. There's no doubt about that. There's an integration coming with games for Windows. I don't know if you heard about this, but a new generation of games coming out this year, starting with Halo 2 for Windows Vista. You'll be able to get achievements in those games that will apply to your Xbox Live account.
Cool. That's neat.
You'll be able to play games against Xbox players. That stuff's all awesome. The Xbox 360 controller, in my mind, is vastly superior as well to this controller they give you with the PlayStation 3.
Well, there's
3,
no rumble
kinda,
on the PlayStation 3.
No, it's awful. It's so stupid. And it's got really limited motion sensor stuff in it. And it's terrible. But on the plus side, you know, the PS3 integrates with the PlayStation Portable, which is really interesting. You can actually download PSP games from their online service and load them onto your PSP from the PlayStation 3. If you download any content, including games that you pay for, you can download them an infinite number of times. There's no one download only. You're
hallelujah.
Done.
Yeah. Hallelujah.
God bless them. Yeah.
Well, and have you seen what Sony plans to do with Home, Sony Home, the new PlayStation 3?
Yeah,
3D
I was...
World?
Sure. I think they need to get some more basic issues ironed out before they get to that, but... you know, whatever. It's getting there. And the other thing is, this thing has incredible backwards compatibility. I mean, this is one of the areas where the Xbox really blew it. You know, they promised a lot of stuff. They came out of the gate with almost nothing. They've done very little to update that over time. I mean, I've been tracking this on my website, and it's just a horrible thing. And if you have a big Xbox collection of games, most people are going to see 50% of those not working on the Xbox 360, which is kind of lousy. And ultimately, I think, too, the other thing for the PlayStation is that, for right now anyway, this thing is so expensive. I don't understand how normal human beings can buy can even afford to own one of these things. I mean,
if you can't,
the games are expensive. The add-ons are expensive. The console is like taking out a mortgage on your house.
You bought the 60 gig versus the
10. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there are various reasons why it's definitely a good deal. I believe it's only $100 more than the low-end one.
Right.
So for that $100, you get some media card reader stuff in the front. You get integrated wireless. You get a much bigger hard drive. there's definitely some advantages. I as with the Xbox, I would recommend if you can do it, get the high end one.
And
but I love it.
And
I
mean, Resistance: Fall of Man. It sounds like.
Oh yikes! This game is awesome. We played this thing. Oh, that's the other thing. You know, it, like Gears of War, you can play it cooperatively. So my son and I played this thing all day Friday. You know, all Friday afternoon. We played it for a few hours Saturday, Sunday, and again on Monday. They had a half day from school for some reason. This kid's been basically home for the last week. You know, but yeah, we're gonna fly through this thing and just finish. We're almost done. Right? I think we're about 25 of 30 levels through the game at this point.
You know, it's so great to see a father and son together killing aliens, you know?
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
And I might, and it's funny, I have this debate with friends about what's the best enemy in a video game. Like, in other words, if you have to do something violent, what can you do to make you not feel bad about that, right? So you could kill, like, Nazis, I think, is a good, you know, pretty clear cut.
They deserve to die.
Evil.
Sure, evil, yeah.
You know, aliens are always... Well, actually, I think aliens aren't always good because aliens could be misunderstood.
Right. They could be nice. We don't know why. They just look funny. Right.
Zombies are always good. They're already dead.
Already dead. You're just helping them along.
Right. So these guys, you know, the bad guys in this game are pretty clear-cut. They're bad. So there's no guilt. It's a guilt-free killing exercise.
And how does Stephanie feel about that?
We're in the cellar. She doesn't come down.
You don't go upstairs. She doesn't come downstairs. It's fair.
We're in the man fort on the big TV.
The man fort. Now, you do recommend getting a second controller.
Yeah, and they're $50.
Outrageous.
For a controller. It's insane. But you have to have two controllers.
You gotta have two.
And they're wireless, and you know, so you can have, I guess you can have seven controllers connected simultaneously. I don't know what you would do with those seven controllers, but you know, they've got a nice, they do things like you can plug in external storage devices and it will read all the content off of that. You can do slideshows and movies like you can on the Xbox, but unlike on the Xbox, those external storage devices can be used to hold games and, you know, whatever you download from their store. I mean, they're very open about that stuff. And I think they've got something good going on here.
Interesting.
I think by overstepping technologically and making it very expensive, they've kind of limited their, the market for the short term, but ultimately, I have no doubt. I mean, I can't wait to see second gen games on this thing. It's already superb looking. I've downloaded some game demos, you know, racing games and some other stuff, and the graphics are just exceptional. Really, really nice.
Very interesting. I have to say, you're the first person I've heard who's really raving about this thing. And
like I said, I mean, I went into this thinking, yeah, whatever. You know, I have to review it. I have to know.
Right.
I'll put this thing to bed. I'll sell it immediately. And then I started playing it. And I said, oh my God,
this is good. I think you talked me into it.
Well, I'm not advocating that you spend $750 necessarily, but if you do, this isn't such a bad way to spend $750.
Hey, nowadays that's, you know, a decent dinner and a movie. So I think
it's also a decent computer. So, I mean,
that's true.
Well, I guess you can connect a keyboard and a mouse. You can browse the internet, you know.
Well, I was always interested in the cell processor. I'm very interested in that. So that's
the fact that this thing is quiet
tells you something.
Listen, after a year and a half almost with the Xbox, that's a selling point. Well, it was like that time I had it running in my office and you could hear it over the little microphone.
I had to tell you to turn it off.
It's like being at 30,000 feet in a plane.
It really is. It's a little loud. Although apparently you can quiet it down by replacing some of the
I bought some of that DataMat stuff so I could do that. And I heard you could get a quieter drive and I'm looking at that too, but I don't know.
Well, Paul, you've opened some eyes here and I'm not going to bring up roughlydrafted.com screed against you.
So I do know who that is.
Daniel Dilger. We've actually had Daniel on Mac Break Weekly and he seemed like a normal person, but it's something about you that just gets Mac fanatics frothing at the mouth, fast, loose, and out of control. He says, apparently, I didn't know this, you're an ultra-right-wing absolutist fundamentalist?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know
I'll have to tell my wife, because that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not.
No, I know you're not.
That's only one of the many inaccuracies on that guy's site, unfortunately.
No, no, I don't want to get in a shooting war with him because, frankly, this is just like every other article I've read about you. It's full of
poopy. Obviously, I'm extending some sort of image that people are misreading. So maybe there's something I could do.
No, don't do anything
to make that easier. But no, I don't mean in this case specifically, but I mean it just in general. I mean, clearly,
I don't see how people could say you're anti-Apple. That's what really surprises me. I think that there are people who are anti-Apple. Maybe that you should be talking about them. But
honestly, I'm pro-reality, and I'm very interested in the truth. I don't like when people rewrite history. I don't like when people spout, conventional wisdom that's wrong.
Right.
We could go on and on.
Like any good reporter, you do your best to report on the truth and as you see it and as accurately as you can. And as any good pundit, and let's face it, everybody on Twit is as much a commentator, as much opinion as we are reporters. I mean, you wear two hats because you're news editor for your magazine, but.
The way I got into this, I mean, 10 years ago when I was doing WinInfo originally, I was basically doing what was today would be considered a blog. I would quote from a story and I would write, this is why this is important. And back then there were legal implications of this at the company I was working for. And they said, look, you can't republish portions of other articles. You're going to have to write your own articles. But the thing you need to remember is this story is not interesting. What's interesting is what you have to say about it.
You've got to have
an opinion.
It's
funny to me. Yeah, it's funny to me that here we are a decade later, and really most of the so-called news we get online is really just blogs where people are quoting some story from, Associated Press.
That's all Twit is. We don't do any original reporting. We don't, because we do original reporting because we review stuff. We talk about our real experiences as well as some opinion. And I guess the point I was making is that when we delve into opinion, we express personal opinion, and you can't argue with somebody's personal opinion. It's just what it is.
Well, there are good opinions and bad opinions, I guess, or I would say opinions that are based on good research or good, an amount of time actually studying a topic or whatever.
Right.
So, hopefully people will gravitate toward the opinions that are more informed,
Well, ultimately. Certainly there's a reason why I use you for Windows Weekly, and it's because I trust your opinions, frankly.
I'm not always right.
None of us are. Nobody ever said that. God, I mean, that would be an unreasonable expectation.
Sure.
We do our best, and when we're wrong, we admit it, we correct it, and we move forward.
Absolutely.
Anyway, it's just every time I see these kinds of things, it cracks me up. And actually, I think Roughly Drafted is a great blog, and I read it all the time, and I like Daniel's. But in this case, something
crazy,
wrong. Crazy, crazy. As many, and this is unfortunately, this is, I think, damaging in the long run to the Mac community because
I do too. This is one of the things
it makes us look nuts.
Yeah, the Mac fanatics, and by fanatics, I don't mean all Mac users. I don't mean all Mac enthusiasts. I mean the really crazy guys, are doing, I think, more harm ultimately to their community than good, and they're part of the reason some people are afraid to go to that community because that's.
We don't want to be seen that way.
That's the vocal public part of it.
Right.
And it's not good. So, I don't know this guy personally, obviously, and I don't know other people who are like him. But my experience has been that when I do meet such people in person and we can actually talk, things turn out very differently.
Exactly.
And we find out that we have a lot more in common than maybe they suspected.
I like both you guys. And exactly. I think that's exactly right. And it's very easy to demonize somebody. I don't think we need to see. We didn't need to do that. That's the kind of thing you do.
I don't know. Maybe he needs to get hits or something. I'm not sure what the rationale is.
No, I don't even want to say that. I think he's saying what he believes, but that's life. Anyway, I don't want to.
Then that's even sadder, so whatever.
All right. Hey, we're going to wrap this up. Do we have more Microsoft interviews to come?
Yeah, I hope so. I'm going to talk to Gary Sharon the next week. Hopefully we can get him on from Internet Explorer, but I think we should get going on the Chris Perlo and
I will get Chris
Scott
and,
Finney
and Scott.
And you said who else? Chris, somebody else?
Chris DeBona, our Linux guy. It might be an interesting four-way conversation.
And yeah, we'll have to put a volume limiter on that one.
Take turns. We'll have a talking stick.
Maybe we could only talk in generalities. I'll be the Windows lemming and.
So if you're
the Mac guy will be Gustav.
If you're a Windows lemming and you want to keep this show on the air, make sure you visit Paul's site, the super site for Windows at winsupersite.com. And of course, his blog is internet-lexis.com. Our podcast site is twit.tv. And Your donations keep this show on the air. We do appreciate them. So if you go there and you contribute to any amount, even $2 a month is enough to keep us afloat. We do appreciate it. By the way, we've got some great Twit gear now. I'm very happy that we've joined forces with Scott Evest, who makes the best geek gear there is, and Think Geek, which is the best geek store there is. I decided to go to the top of the line. And they've done some great Twit fleeces and hoodies and a fantastic Twit hat. Go to twit.tv and click the link there. It'll take you to the Scott Evest store, the Twit store on Scott Evest and Think Geek. And thank you so much, Paul. We'll talk to you again next week.
Take care. Sounds good.